Hello and welcome to Enter the Dark, the series of podcasts with the co-creators of the Coca-Cola Signature Mixers. This podcast is a conversation with Max Venning. Max is owner of a number of bars in London, including award-winning Three Sheets. He is also the founder of Top Cuvée and Shop Cuvée, the kind of purveyor, the seller of amazing takeaway products, amazing wines, and with his brother Noel, a kind of changed that part of East London and turned it into a really great place to go for drinks. Three Sheets has won numerous awards. And for me, Max's greatest strength isn't behind the bar. Max is an out-and-out entrepreneur. He really understands people, and he really understands how to build businesses. This is an amazing conversation that bizarrely all started with a chance meeting with his mum that I had on the train from London to Manchester. So dive in, enter the dark, and let me be your guide. So I'm sat in a bar called Three Sheets, a bar that's co-owned by Max Venning, and I'm sat with Max Venning. Max was one of the co-creators for the Signature Mixers project and runs a number of amazing spaces and bars and is one of the most creative bartenders I've ever worked with. And actually, Max, one of the most creative entrepreneurs that I've ever worked with. Now, the thing that interests me in this, the thing that interests me in lots of ways is what made you make cocktails? That's the fascinating thing. But just as a little intro, just tell me about yourself briefly.
So I suppose I'm a business owner, bartender. We've sort of expanded out from that a little bit now as well. I do what I enjoy doing, first and foremost. I think rather than sitting down and saying, what do we need to do to have a successful business, which obviously is more of a conversation now, I've lived my life basically saying, oh, I really enjoy this. So how can I make the most out of that? And which has led to doing a few different things that I really enjoy. I suppose that's probably me, how I see it.
That's brilliant. That's rare as well, that kind of focus on what you enjoy rather than what you think you should do to make money. It's really easy to be sidetracked by that. And look, you've made me drinks. I've drank your cocktails and obviously I've drank your signature mixer. You really understand flavor and you understand taste. But tell me, what did your childhood taste like? How important was taste and flavour when you were growing up?
It's funny because if you ask my mum or my dad or my brother, I was like a really, really fussy eater growing up. So I wouldn't eat any like greens. I would really struggle. I actually didn't eat seafood till about 2 years ago, which is bananas because now I eat a lot of it. But it was just something I didn't enjoy as a kid and then just carried on just not eating it, refusing to do it. I remember smells probably a lot more. You know, there are smells, a few tastes that just take me back to certain things. Ginger biscuits and Earl Grey tea reminds me of my grandparents, very specific room in their house, freshly cut grass from the garden, and like a few different things. But it was definitely like an outdoor childhood. And I don't mean like wild and wonderful and roaming through the forest because I grew up in South Manchester, so that wasn't really an option. But a lot of sport, you know, always with a lot of people, going to watch sport, playing sports, being outside a lot, which is a really good thing for me. And then I think as I grew up a little bit and got into my sort of mid to late teens, it's when I really started getting interested in food and booze, but probably for a different reason than making cocktails. But that ended up leading to, you know, working behind bars, which was definitely more in the first of it being like, oh, I want some extra cash and what a great place to work rather than, you know, I don't know what the other options were at the time. I'm going to say doing a paper round, but it probably wasn't that. It was probably like doing whatever. So yeah, got behind the bar and started like really, really enjoyed that through uni. So it sort of led to working behind bars and taking it seriously.
We'll talk about that in a minute, but I'm struck by your first instinct was to talk about Earl Grey tea and ginger biscuits. Really strong flavors, both of those. Mm. Milk in your tea or lemon?
Oh, I know, it's like a English travesty. Basically, it was my grandma drank Earl Grey tea with milk. And so we went down there, we drank it. that's what we had, and she had ginger biscuits, and that's like a really clear memory for me. So now I still drink Earl Grey tea with milk, even though it's a horrendous faux pas.
I don't think it is. The way I look at these things is whatever works for you.
Yeah, sure, exactly.
And you know, the snap of a ginger biscuit is beyond flavour. It's textural.
Incredible.
And this is one of the things I miss the most. I don't eat sugar now.
Yeah,
it's one of the things I miss the most.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, of course.
It's ginger biscuits.
I don't think I could do that.
I've done it for lots and lots of reasons. Mm. And it won't always be like this, for certain. But those evocative flavour memories are really, really interesting. And they come with us all the way through our life, and we go back to them for comfort. And we'll maybe come on to that as well in a second. But you mentioned this a little bit, so I was going to ask you, what drew you to work in hospitality? But it was students, it was going through university and needing a job.
Yeah, it was fun. I've always worked since I was like, I don't know, well, I mean, I played probably too much sport to work until I was about 16, and then I always worked maybe a bit older. And then as soon as I was 17, I got a job delivering pizzas. And then a job in a pub just before I was 18. So I've always worked, and I've always worked full time as well. It was never a part time job. It was always 5 days a week. And when I got to uni, I just carried that on. And I'm like, 18. I'm like, I might as well work in a bar, nightclub, where I can have a drink, have fun, chat to people, and enjoy it. And that's always what I sort of wanted to do. And then I was finishing my degree, and there was like an economic downturn. The big financial crisis, 2008-07. Which was sort of the first time in, I think, probably 30 or 40 years where leaving university with a degree actually meant I don't have a guaranteed job at the end of this at all. I'm really enjoying working behind the bar, making cocktails. The cocktail industry was in growth. You know, I could see the next maybe 2 or 3 or 4 years of my life earning okay money, but living a very like desirable lifestyle that I wanted to live. You know, brands were putting money behind bartenders. They were traveling around the world. They were sort of engineering these celebrity bartenders, if you call it that way. And so I thought, I studied geography. I'm like, oh, it's either town planning, geography teacher, we'll give this a go. So I thought I'll do that. So that ended up to me sort of really knuckling down and taking it seriously.
It's really interesting. And there's some fascinating observations here. So I studied geography, town planning. That's what I thought I was going to do. There's some very strong similarities between creating a sense of place in an urban environment and creating a sense of place in a bar. Because you could just work in bars, Max, but you didn't. You then created your own bar, your own space. Why did you make that leap from being great behind the bar to actually creating a space that people wanted to come to?
I suppose if you ask any young bartender what they want to do, it's open their own bar. I think it's not like a unique thing. But, you know, every time I do something, it's always like, okay, what are we going to do next? You know, as soon as you achieve whatever it is, whether it's small or large, you know, as soon as you become the operations manager, it's like, right, what's next? I'm probably too impatient in terms of that. So taking steps before you're ready to do the next one. But then once you've taken the next step, you learn how to sort of cope with it. So I realized I probably studied geography because I really enjoy looking at the way cities work. So when you look at town planning, I mean, without getting into the depths of it too much, I think it's very, very difficult to get into councils or government and really make a difference these days, because I think it's all careerism in there. And it's not something that, you know, it's not like, oh, I'm going to go and work for this and then make things change, because I don't think the system is set up that you can do that anymore. And I thought, okay, well, we work behind a bar, do that. Next step is to open your own bar, do it in an area that I love. And I have loved, I've lived here for the last 10 years, you know, feels like home in Dalston, and do something that we wanted to do rather than what maybe you could argue the area didn't need it, if I'm putting my sort of anti-gentrification hat on. But it was something that we wanted to do in an area that I loved, and at the time I'd lived in for 6 years, and I wanted to make a place that we wanted to come and drink, which is sort of what it is. And then we did that.
And lo and behold, everybody else wanted to come and drink there as well.
So it's been a ride. It's been great, you know.
So fascinatingly, there are some really strong similarities between co-creation in drinks and co-creation in spaces. Are they both arts, or are they both sciences, or is it a blend?
I think I view things with quite a scientific lens. But I think, you know, behind all art, there is some sort of science, right? If you look down, boil it down to that. But you have to know what you want to do, and you have to understand the different elements of it. But I suppose you take that scientific understanding of the elements and turn it and put them together, but it's the putting them together that is the art. And you would say that about any art or any science, right? They're not separate things. Every brilliant scientist is also an artist.
I agree. And, you know, we talk about them as separately and actually they're interwoven. It's only in the last 200 years that we pulled them apart. Before that, they were seen as the same things.
Yeah. And I think, you know, when you create any space or any drink or whatever you're creating, a scientific theory, you have to take your knowledge, you have to take what you know, you have to take the evidence that's out there, your experience, put it together to create something new, in inverted commas. Because I don't know how new anything really is, but, you know, there is constant growth and adaptation.
Totally. I first met you for the Signature Mixers project. Although I'd heard of you before, we met at the Signature Mixers project and it was a great co-creation process. And building on your last point about how things change and improve and evolve, we were given the task of taking the world's best mixer and making it better. And it was a really great place to play. Physically, it was your space, but also it was a really great safe space where failure didn't matter. We were given permission to fail. Tell me about how you approached that workshop and tell me about your signature mixer.
I approached it as I would approach everything, right? And you'd sort of just go into it with an open mind. We were working with other people, which I think is really important. You know, and I was paired up with Amit and, you know, we didn't make drinks the same way. We didn't see flavor particularly as the same way, but that's even better because it means that you sort of have a new skew on things. And yeah, I mean, you know, Coca-Cola is the most recognized flavor in the world, right? It could have been daunting to even sort of mess around with that. And it probably was a little bit, but because the environment was fun and safe and, you know, there was no pressure, you know, it meant that we could sort of play around and be, you know, have fun with it, be creative with it. Maybe that term gets bandied around a lot. It was a lot of fun. I just wanted to create something that enhanced the flavors of the spirit, basically, you know, married up with it without taking it too far away from its original thing. You know, when I first started drinking, whatever age that was, it was whiskey and Coke. You know, that was what got me through those late nights. All the sugar. Yeah, I can't believe how much I probably used to drink. But so I wanted to stick true to that, but also create something interesting that fit with the style of things that we do things. So a little bit of smoke, a little bit of wood, but nothing too out there.
I mean, that's a really nice way of looking at it, taking something familiar and then adding something that's a little new, a little fresher that maybe the consumer, the customer isn't used to. When we did the consumer tasting in the evening, the responses were really strong. They were for all of the signature mixes that we went to market, they were really strong. Were you nervous when people were testing?
It was a while ago now. Probably a bit nervous. But I think, you know, maybe it's because I played it safe, not played it safe, but because we'd already had the bar, because I've worked making drinks for a long time in a lot of different places, I sort of feel like I can gauge public opinion quite well. And one of the ways to do that is to keep it as familiar as possible with a slightly new thing and not challenge too much. You know, there is a space for people in food and drink who challenge. But for me, I think my job is to make people happy and to give people something they enjoy. So I knew with the signature mixer that I'd created, especially in those early workshops, that it wasn't going to really challenge people. So I was more excited to see the reaction and also to learn if there was any notes that we needed to pull up or pull down a little bit, basically.
That's interesting. And that smokiness that comes through also sits in your Nan's Earl Grey tea, isn't it?
Exactly. Yeah. Yeah. So, I mean, yeah, smoke is a flavour that's everywhere. And, you know, I definitely didn't want it to be like a strong peaty smoke, which I love, but it's just that familiarity. Because, you know, smoke as an aroma is something that is literally everywhere, right? Everywhere from birth to death. You know, everything we go through, whether it's good smoke, which might be like a wood fire, or it's petrol fumes from the roads, you know, it's something that is always there. And that element of smoke, which gives us a familiarity with it. And if it's used at the right level, can be pretty enjoyable.
Totally.
Hopefully.
I smoked some salt the other day.
Yeah?
Yeah, I was smoking some chilies and the smoker was still going. Mm. So I put a sieve of salt in.
Nice.
And yeah, about 4 hours of smoking. Yeah, and I'll send you some. It's absolutely, it lifts it to another level. It's,
yeah, yeah.
It's that familiarity, but actually something slightly different. So it's easy for you, this one, potentially. But we're moving in towards winter at the moment. How do we take your signature mixer and create a perfect serve for winter, for kind of Christmas kind of feel? How do you take this into the winter months?
I mean, for me, it is super simple. You have everything refrigerated and get your favorite wood-aged spirit. So like a brandy, a whiskey, and do equal parts that with the smoky notes, and then over ice, or just have it both chilled in a glass. Super simple, that's it. Maybe a squeeze of orange, but zest, but I think really easy. Keep the strength of the whiskey, you know, to warm you up, but you're just adding those extra flavors in there as well.
And do you still drink your own mixer?
Yeah, no, it's banned from the house now. No, I'm joking. I don't drink a lot at home. I drink a lot of work, so I try and avoid drinking at home. It's like a pitfall of the job.
It's funny, I drink them more on their own than I do with alcohol.
Mm.
They're so strong.
Yeah.
In terms of how well they stand up, that they actually are brilliant as normal standard drinks.
Yeah, I mean, that's it. You know, that was always in our minds, you know, because we obviously they're individual things, but we all work together. It was in our minds that they can't just taste good with booze. They have to taste good as a standalone thing as well. So we made sure, well, hopefully we made sure that happened.
Yeah, for certain. 2 or 3 years ago now when we did that, what's happened in your life, in your world since then?
It was a while ago. So, I mean, it was an incredible project. We released them and then we launched them, you know, all over the world. Really exciting. And then we're about to do some more work on it and grow it. And then this thing happened, which has been interesting. But I suppose since then we closed a bar, opened another bar, opened a restaurant. And then now we've got like an online and physical shop, selling natural wine, bottled cocktails, that sort of thing. And Three Sheets as a bar is going from strength to strength. So more of the same, I suppose, a bit of a pivot, which has been really successful for us. You know, lockdown has been like obviously a mad time for every single person on the planet, which is an interesting idea, and not an idea that I don't think anyone would have thought about before, is that, you know, obviously the super rich are richer and great for them, but it's not really changed their lives. But everyone else is under pressure. Everyone else is under the cosh financially, emotionally, you know, all of those things. So it's very strange for the whole world to be under the same feeling, because normally, you know, you would have growth in the West or the East and then everything would balance out and it would flip and flop. But now everyone's under the same sort of blanket of COVID. So we saw some more togetherness, it seemed, for a while, but maybe that's dissipating a little bit, but more support for each other. You know, always these sort of times bring out the best in people to a certain extent. But that's sort of the broader picture. We got plunged into it like every other hospitality industry when we're told, absolutely stay open, but nobody go. Which is just bonkers from your esteemed leadership to sort of put that message out, which unfortunately they've now slipped back to. So we didn't know what was going to happen. We didn't know if there was going to be any support. So we closed the restaurant and started a delivery service straight away. Delivery food, delivery wine. And that has now expanded into, you know, our highest turnover business by quite a way. So that's been the last 6 months of my life, is learning how to run an e-commerce business.
And this is what really interests me. So the people that do well in difficult situations like this, they're the ones that make decisions fastest. They're the ones that are able to look at the situation and go, okay, well, I can't waste this. This needs to be something amazing. And what I loved about what you did is it was so rapid. Shop Cuvée appeared from seemingly nowhere. Did it feel like that was a brave decision, or did it feel like it was the only decision you could make?
It was the only thing we could have done. Maybe if you look back, you say it was brave. The most hilarious thing is we decided to do it. I was working behind my friend's bar at the Sun Tavern on St. Patrick's Day, 17th of March. Boris Johnson literally just come out and said, you don't go to bars, but they can remain open. There was nothing of a support package. And my business partner at the restaurant, me and my brother were working behind the bar, business partner at the restaurant came to the bar and was like, what are we going to do? He's like, I reckon maybe we should close the restaurant and do food delivery. And, you know, we had two Italian chefs and they were just like, this is happening in Italy. Everywhere's closed. The places that are doing home delivery are doing well. It's going to get a lot worse. So we listened to them. Bro was like, I reckon we should do this. I was like, absolutely, close the restaurant. We'll start delivering food tomorrow. started working on the bottle cocktails the next day. And yeah, so we literally, it's like a cliche, isn't it? We decided the future of our business over a pint.
I love that. Yeah. I love that. And I mean, the bottled cocktails, they sound fascinating. So how did you decide what to put in bottles? How did that decision-making process go?
To be honest, actually, initially we did it from three sheets and we were like, look, we don't know when we're going to reopen. So we need to get through all of the stock we have here because there's no point sitting on £4,000 worth of stock if there's no support and the bar closes, you know, has to close. So we need to sell all of that. So we were selling glassware. We were selling basically anything we could sell, we were selling. So we used the stock that we had, bottled it up, sold it out, and then refined that to a core line of products that we haven't seen on the market yet to a high standard. And we haven't seen anyone in our position doing something similar. So we're doing pretty much classic cocktails with a tiny twist, but something really familiar to customers, because we want that to go to a wider market, basically. We don't want it to just be for people that enjoy drinking in top 50 cocktail bars or want to try real wild new things. We want it for people to be like, oh, you know, I've had a long day at work. I just want an old fashioned and I don't want to make one. So I just grab it from the fridge and pour it out. And that's the idea behind it. Obviously, shelf stability, production cost, all of these different things we thought about. And, you know, it's lucky we had time to think about it, right? Because we were selling everything, seeing what worked, seeing how to do it. You know, we launched a product, which you would never do. Although I say that, but it seems like I've done it with every single thing I've done, is you say, let's do it, you do it, and you spend the next 6 months learning how to do it, rather than the probably more established route, which is plan everything and then do it. But it's worked for us, I think.
Do you think there's an element that if you sat and thought about it and planned everything, you wouldn't do it? You would talk yourself out of it?
Maybe. Maybe it's how we work. You know, I think Noel's a little bit different, my brother, because he's always like, oh, we need to figure it out. I'm very much like, yeah, we can do it and then figure it out. You know, Brody's similar in that sense, or maybe somewhere in between. So it's good, you know. If you're aware of your market, if you're aware of the situation in your market, if you have a pretty solid understanding of how things work without having a full understanding, you can make a decision on whether it will work or won't work technically, legally, and then figure it out along the way. And also, you know, especially with the shop and the bottle cocktails, over the period of lockdown, we had so much consumer slack because everyone was supportive, everyone wanted to help. And they gave you a second chance, which was not the market that we were in before. You know, it was one chance, gone, you're out. And if I look at the service that we offered it through the shop, when we were delivering wine around the country using Collect Plus, and 40% of the parcels were breaking and they were taking 4 or 5 days to get to the intended location. I'm like, I cannot believe people kept ordering from us. Obviously, that learning curve in the first 2 months was amazing because now we were like, and we said when we were doing it, we were packing boxes, we were saying, this isn't good enough. And we sort of said, slightly tongue in cheek, our service needs to be as good as Amazon's, right? And now it literally is. You know, if you live in London, you get it within an hour of ordering, right? You order your wine, you get it within an hour. If you order till 4 p.m., you get it the next day, anywhere in the UK. And I think that's what we aim for. You know, we've gone from like 30, 40% breakages of parcels to less than 3%. Real clear sort of, you know, messaging to the consumer about where they're going to get their product. The prices have come down, they're competitive. You know, the website's slick, it works. We're working on online marketing strategies. You know, we've got email marketing strategies, we've got social marketing strategies. And it's been like a whirlwind 6 months, but absolutely incredible, to the point now where I think, you know, if we had an idea for another e-commerce business, I would know how to set it up. Obviously not know everything about it, because that's an impossible thing. You can never know everything about that. It's been mad. And now we're really proud of what we've got and what we offer. The same with the bottle cocktails. You know, we've refined them. Now they're shelf stable, great product, super consistent, and a really good price. So that's the next big thing. Well, Q4 on the online shop, I think it has to be busy, because I think the tough times are going to come from January to March next year. Well, I was just getting coffee for us before and I bumped into my friend who owns a brewery around the corner, and he was saying, it's like riding a bike down a hill when there's a hill on the other side. So at the moment we're in the downhill till Christmas, right? And we have to get up as much speed as we can, because there's going to be nothing left in the tank to get up that hill after Christmas. And we just have to freewheel up the hill and hopefully we get to the top.
So you're all about creating momentum, right?
Yeah, exactly. You know, build up as much as we can, because God knows what the world's going to look like in January and February. It's going to be pretty interesting. Let's say interesting, because, you know, we'll see what we can do.
I mean, change is, it's a cliche. It's ever present. It's normal. Making those decisions quickly really matters. What I've seen in you and in Noel is this ability to change, to morph, to innovate at speed. And that's quite unusual. What is it about you two that made that possible, do you think?
I don't know. I mean, I think we're lucky, and lucky it was the situation that we were in. We are a small business and we can change things very, very quickly, right? So between us two and Brody and Alan up at Little Mercies, you know, we're like, okay, we need to change. Okay, we're going to go from opening a bar to delivering cocktails, you know? We have a small enough amount of staff that we can say, okay, guys, actually tomorrow, don't come in at, you know, 4 p.m. to open a bar for an evening shift. You need to come in at 11 a.m. We're going to bottle some cocktails and send them out from 5 p.m. till 10 p.m. And because we've got a small team, because they're supportive, incredible people across the board, everywhere, you know, at no point have any of the staff members been like, I'm not doing that. You know, we're like to the guys, like, right, you need to go out on a bicycle and deliver this food, or, you know, you need to come in and bottle cocktails, or actually you need to KP tonight. Once we reopened, and all of the staff are like, absolutely, you know, we work for you. We work with you. So we can support you in any way we can. So it means that we can make these decisions. It's not like moving a bus. It's like moving a bike. We can do it quickly. We can work quickly. And you have to these days, you know, the success of Shop Cuvée is absolutely down to the speed in which we moved, you know, and testament to Brody, you know, he was on it, you know, and we pushed from day one, and it's probably been the most, you know, I see this 6 months of Shop Cuvée and the first 6 months of Three Sheets as the two periods of my life where the mental capacity has been stretched to the most. It's also like at the time the most enjoyable, but also the most sort of rewarding. And it gives me the most as a person. You know, I'm like, that's where I want to be. Not 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, 52 weeks a year for the rest of my life. But definitely those periods of intense pressure and stress are very, very rewarding. If it works out. Thankfully, both of those things have worked out to this point.
That's brilliant. What's your best-selling bottled cocktail?
The French 75 still is. That still flies. And Negronis and Old Fashions, you know? People like classics. Negronis and Old Fashions. They're like... Yeah, I mean, and it makes sense. They're both delicious, right? And they do a job.
Yeah. Just to finish off, Max, what are you most excited about for the next 6 months? Where does your optimism sit?
Look, it's very difficult, obviously, for everyone to sort of project what will happen over the next 6 months. I feel very lucky because I think all of our businesses will at least survive, okay? And it's something I would never have said as a business owner. Oh, great, our business is surviving, because that's not the point in opening a business. It's not to survive. It's to grow and to move forward and to expand and to do whatever you want to do. That's the whole idea. But I feel at the moment very lucky. I think, I hope everything will survive. With a shop, we want to open. We've opened a shop. We want to open another shop. And then within the next couple of years, you know, hopefully open 2-3 more individual sites and grow the online business. That's where my focus is at the moment. You know, Noel's running the bar. Alan's running Little Mercies. Me and Brody are focusing on the growth of the shop. So I'm excited to see what Christmas will bring. I packed 109 individual bottles of wine in cardboard boxes till 12:30 half past midnight last night to send out for a group order. So maybe I'm excited to pack less cardboard boxes. I know more about cardboard than I ever thought I'd care to, and I ever do care to now.
Are you on C or B flute?
Oh, we're on a custom packaging made for wine bottles. And like, it's honestly, we're like, it's all, I mean, luckily we're working with companies that use at least 60% recycled material.
Yeah.
And we recycle all the cardboard that goes out. But it's, mad one. I mean, we'll just see, right? I mean, it's hard to get excited about anything at the moment, but I'm just excited to see what happens, you know, see how the world is. You know, the best and the worst thing about a capitalist economy is that even though this is forced by a health issue, there will be a massive downturn, and afterwards there'll be an upturn. That's the way it works. So hopefully we can ride out the downturn. We've got a new business out of it, which is incredible. And then after that, we'll see. But it'll always be about doing new things, making new things happen. Trying to find fun where there is fun.
Well, and that's where we started, right? You know, you said you don't want to do things that aren't fun. And the momentum that we can gather in difficult times is incredible when we try. And there's lessons there for when we enter another period after this. And from my point of view, watching what you've done with Shop Cuvée has been astonishing. And I really thank you for the input you had into the Signature Mixers process, because you added entrepreneurship, and that's what shines out of you, Manx.
Thanks. Yeah, I mean, someone referred to me that as either, like, they were like, oh, you're like proper entrepreneur now. And I'm like, yeah, I mean, I don't know, maybe, but it's a long conversation about what that word even means, isn't it?
Well, I agree. It's easy to bandy around and hard to understand.
Yeah, exactly.
But thank you. And thank you for your Signature Mixer. It's a great, great mixer. Thank you, Manx Benning. I really appreciate your time.
Thanks. Cheers. A lot. Cheers.